Hi, this is Bobby Ryan, and you're listening to the Sens Follow-Up.
Studio 65 in South Kanata, where the ground is soggier and wetter than a seat at the ACC after a Leafer wets themselves every time Austin Matthews touches the puck. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 16 of the Sens Call-Ups for Tuesday, April 18th, 2017. The Sens are up 2-1 in the series after Bobby Ryan's overtime goal last night, but still, some fans can't be positive, like the one who texted the postgame show last night insisting that the coach sit Stone and put Colin White in the lineup.
Why do you listen to that?
I couldn't sleep.
I haven't seen a lot of negativity.
Not on Bobby Ryan.
Not on Bobby Ryan, but there was a fair amount of it last night, which just blew my mind. Hey, how are your stress levels these days?
It's it's a freaking roller coaster, right?
And they're all tight games, so you did get no reprieve. No. Like, oh, they're up 3-0. We'll get a little reprieve.
Yeah, I made that mistake.
And
Yeah, because I went over to Canucks yesterday and just... I don't know how your fiance wants me around anymore. It's like, just walk in, like, I'm going to apologize ahead of time.
Pre-apology before the game starts.
I will be yelling a lot.
You're a little intense. just a little.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So I don't know how she felt after I left. But
that's fine.
Yeah. You warned them, right?
Yeah, in case it's not completely evident, my voice is in very bad shape. I think all of us are suffering from some sort of upper body injury as far as our health
internal
is concerned.
Injury.
It's the playoffs. You play through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone plays hurt.
My voice is, there's a lot of me that's hurt, but we'll soldier on and do
that. It's just like, don't worry about it, Cardinal. It's like, I'll take care of it. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Well, and then congestion.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually, my voice is worse today, but I feel better than I did when I woke up this morning. So that's nice. Oh, when I woke up this morning, I felt like
did you feel like you got shot in the knees?
No, I felt like I had been in a rock tumbler.
Oh.
Just everything hurt. Everything. I'm like, this isn't funny.
You have a butt scratcher?
I don't like that.
Nope.
Dang. All right, we have some games to talk about. We are very pleased to have an interview in a little while. But first... a couple of quick housekeeping blurbs. The email address is podcast@senscallups.com. We have one email, a very short email to read this week. The forums are at senscallups.com. I have to admit, I was very, very busy last week because it's the week from HE Double Hockey Sticks. There's irony there.
But it's all...
Holy Week is the week from hell. There's some humor in there. So I haven't been in them a whole lot. So I don't even know how the playoff pool is going.
I'm winning.
Yeah.
Nice.
I love your strategy.
But so please send us email. I'm sure people have opinions about how the playoffs are going so far or their thoughts about them.
Really no negative ones.
Yeah. Mm. you could also send them to us via the waiver wire at 1-844-SCU-6565. We have one voicemail, which we'll get to in a little while. And again, please put in a quick review for whatever source you get our podcast from.
Game on!
Wasn't easy.
Do you like how they've gone back to the original Blur song too for the playoffs?
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice little switch there. Subtle, but nice.
That's what we play in the playoffs.
You don't mess with the original because it's the original. Now, game one was last Friday?
I think so.
Wednesday? Wednesday.
Okay. Because this was the one that I actually did get to see on TV.
Oh, you did?
On tape delay, albeit, but I did get to see it on
TV. I was there.
So, game one. No Mathot. Everybody else was in, so that means the scratches were Neil, Dzingel, Kelly, White, Harper, Jokipaka, and all the black aces.
And watching Mathot warm up, because he did come out for the pregame warm-up.
Yeah.
He just, something looked, you could tell he was mostly one-handing the puck, and every time he reached down, it looked to me like he was really struggling, except for maybe some really close-up pass play, but.
Yeah. Well, he was passing it back and forth with Dzingel.
So. Now, Claesson played in that game.
Yes.
Correct. Yes. Okay. So Claesson was in for Mathot. I have to say, the building sounded really good on TV. It looked good, but it sounded really good.
The atmosphere was fantastic.
Yeah, it was electric, and I forgot to ask Ian about this, which you will not hear in the future because I forgot to ask it. But Ottawa's been getting a lot of flack in regards to being boring and all of this.
From uneducated fans who don't go to all the games. Sometimes.
Right. So with that... And again, we've been everywhere, so it's been around the same wherever we've gone. In the last 20 years, the Senators have made the playoffs 16 times.
Mm-hmm,
or exactly. 80% of the time. So our baseline, not local reference, but our baseline is to make the playoffs. So we don't get excited about the regular season.
As excited, that's correct. I recall when I first moved here thinking, man, I'd rather save up and just go to the playoff games. Yep. But then we went through years
which a lot of people have to do.
Yeah. But then we've gone through years where we weren't making it. And they're like, oh, crap, you really take that for granted.
Absolutely.
Just as a quick aside, they are ranked third in the last 20 years in number of years of playoff appearances. Number one of the playoff appearances in the last 20 years.
Detroit.
Number one is Detroit with 19.
SJ.
Number two is San Jose at 17. And in third place, there's a tie at 16, which would be the Senators, the Penguins, and the Flyers.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So
there is no problem with the game atmosphere for a playoff game.
Oh, no.
We know how to bring it. We know when to bring it.
It looked good, but it sounded really good on TV.
It was really incredible. Good. It really was incredible. So, like, you can say what you will about Edmonton having to sell or wanting to sell tickets for $80 to the arena, which is a beautiful arena. I still wouldn't do that. But yeah,
concourse passes is what they're
called. Concourse pass.
And you weren't allowed to stand in the walkways out to the seats.
Well, they're that so just narrow seems like anyway.
It's just a nightmare of.
Well, yeah, imagine it was clogged up with people.
Because I would sneak off.
Yeah. Well, I would sneak up. I don't know what I don't know what that arena is like, but I'd sneak up to the top of the 300s in the standing area.
Exactly.
Stand
that's
there.
What I do.
That's what I do, but you know, that's just me. So this game, Eugene,
don't sell concourse passes.
Don't. In this game, Bobby Ryan had a terrific first effort and an amazing second effort on the first goal by Ottawa. Well, the only goal by Ottawa. That was a tremendous, tremendous display.
Bobby freaking Ryan.
Patience.
Patience.
It was a beautiful, beautiful goal, but right afterwards when you could tell how happy he was to have scored that, I was like, okay, that was a great goal, and I'm really happy he scored, and I'm really happy he scored. Like, I'm happy for him.
Was that the first time this season that the chants, Bobby,
I'd imagine so.
Yep.
That was the first period. The second period, the Senators held the Bruins to zero shots on goal.
That's incredible.
That was quite astonishing.
Those first two periods? We're amazing.
Perfect. Very good.
So lock it up, tighten it up, and we're good, right?
Yeah. Well, translates to play afraid to lose.
No. They were playing wonderfully to protect a 2-0 lead.
They got hemmed in their own zone.
It was a 1-0 game.
Well, I was going to say, now both goals were the result of being hemmed in for long shifts, big style. The players who were on the ice were absolutely exhausted because they'd been on the ice
like that
for over a minute on those two goals. And I mean, as for the coach, one goal was the result of six turnovers, and the other one was a result of five, all in our own zone.
And they've been continuing to be in that position through the games that were to follow too. And at what point as much as you want to get frustrated with Ottawa getting hemmed in their own zone and complain about who's playing on defense when they're out there, at what point do we just have to give kudos to the Boston Bruins that they are very aggressive and very good forechecking team?
I was going
to
say their forecheck is very strong. Like, very strong. Like, it's their weapon right now.
And
they
shows.
Don't have any defense.
You
so
think
they
about
forecheck.
You think about when you're most frustrated with the Ottawa Senators, they can't seem to get out of their own zone. Well, you know, yeah. And they got to learn. But
maybe it's the other guys.
Well, maybe it's the other guys.
I was going to say, it's Boston's defensive tool right now because their defense is so depleted. So their best defensive strategy is keep the puck in our end.
And I know everybody's favorite player to hate, but I'm just going to put this out here. Holy crap, is Alex Marchand, or Brad Marchand, an incredible player.
He's skilled.
Alex Marchand.
That doesn't make, yeah. Is he such a great DJ?
I was going to say, you're talking about, yeah, all right.
No, Brad Marchand, he's just an incredible player. Every time he touches the puck, I'm petrified of what he's going to do.
It's too bad there's lots of hockey skill and a 5-cent brain.
Well, I love to have him on my team.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
He doesn't know exactly what not to do.
I'd take him on my team any day.
I'd have to think about that one. I love his skill, but I'm not really fond of the rest of it. So that was game one. They got a
suck.
35 goals.
That was a sucky ending, especially because we really owned them except for those two shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate.
That was an unfortunate loss.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, game two. Game two was on Saturday at 3:00.
And you know what? It was a great atmosphere, too. You know, you think afternoon game. This was a long weekend, too, which made a difference.
Yeah, Canucks just panics right off the bat of the day.
What?
It's like, because we get a text at 12:30 in the afternoon. It's like, there's a lot more Bruins jerseys out here than last game. It's like, Canuck, Saturday.
It's the weekend.
They came up.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You
really
noticed
it.
You're
going to get there first. Don't worry about it.
Oh, I don't know if I was panicking. I was just commenting. There's a lot more Bruins jerseys in the arena.
Yeah.
Now,
they were buying all the tickets from the Leafers who had bought them.
Probably. Yeah. The red zone, as I call it, which is the entertainment area outside gate one, you know, the main area.
Big plaza.
They said it opened up at noon. I had nothing going on. I was by myself. So I decided to head over there. I think I got over there 12:30-ish. What I didn't realize is that the doors don't open until 1:30. So I had about an hour to kill out in that red zone.
Oh.
Well, I got there way too early.
There's beer.
There's food trucks.
Yeah, you got there way too early and just turned your day into like an 8-hour day.
There's food trucks. You know, I had some. Yeah.
Something.
I walked around and stuff. It was fine. Thank goodness it was a nice day. The rain hadn't started yet.
Now, wasn't it the previous Saturday where the last home game was at 12:30?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that wasn't bad either.
That was
because it was spring. Because it was spring.
Very curious time, to be sure. So, this game starts. The Bruins get the first goal. Uh-oh. That's not good.
Yep.
But the next goal, kind of huge. That was Clark MacArthur scoring for the first time in 2 years.
And the reaction of him and the fan base.
Well, the whole team, him, the team, and the fan base was astonishing.
Yeah.
The building made me proud.
I've rewatched it on replay. It's nothing compared to what it was being there.
Oh, I imagine.
It's just the cheer and then another level.
Once they realized who it was.
Yeah. Now what's lost in this beautiful pass by Ryan?
Yep. And it was a good moment. It was a good feel-good moment.
Lasted about, what, a minute or so?
About a minute or so, yeah. And then the Bruins scored again. And that was when Eric Karlsson had a bit of a chewing fat moment with them.
Well, that goal was deflating. This is the goal where the puck's coming back to Anderson. He's way out of his net to get to the puck first. And miscommunication, whatever it was, lack of brass not back checking enough, and Andy misplays it. Oops. And no Senators are there except for Karlsson, who tries in desperation, but he's got two people to hold off and pucks in the back of the net. Shorthanded.
No.
And then they got another goal not too long after, right? The Bruins to put it up 3-1.
Yes.
At this point, and I know I'm not alone, so you can call me whatever.
Oh, no, black clouds were gathering.
Not only black clouds are gathering at 2-1, because the goals were so hard to come by. And they were so tight. Like
they get it back right away.
And they got it back right away. And then they went up. At this point, I felt that was the season.
Yep, same.
In fact, they went into intermission. I think I bought a popcorn. I just sat there and just kind of ate it. And as the third period started, I was just kind of like not even in it. I was just kind of watching, zoned out, and thinking, geez, how did it come to this?
Now, I didn't write down who scored the Weidman. Second goal. Weidman, thank you.
Even when Weidman scored, I'm like, yeah, oh, that's good. At least they made it close, but I don't think they're going to do it.
And then Erik Karlsson schools what the entire team by skating around, deking around, moving, 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 shoot, Brassard, in.
And at this point, I'm backing it.
Dun, dun, dun.
But wow.
Just what a play.
That was the play of the year by Erik Karlsson.
Get on until my back,
game,
team. Just
until game three.
Follow me. Follow me. And I just saw him start off, and I just started hitting my buddy. I'm like, heads up, heads up, because he was playing with his phone. But it's just like, oh, and just the crowd of us, because we see Erik Karlsson, so it's just a, oh, here he goes, goal.
Well, the thing is, in game one, he didn't have that gear.
No.
He was hurt. This game two, it's like, wait a second, he's got that gear, and yeah. He went. I don't know if he's playing through pain. I'm sure he still is. But wow.
He's more comfortable, I think.
He's faking it. Yeah. Fake.
But I think it was really good that the goal was actually Erik Karlsson and Derek Brassard.
Yeah, and everyone's friends again.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good. And then Dion Phaneuf scores in overtime.
Holy crap.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep. MacArthur and Phaneuf are instrumental in overtime win against Boston.
The two players that were there for the collapse. And MacArthur was scratched.
MacArthur
was a scratch. Dion played, right?
Yep. Yes. Oh, yeah.
He was on for last goal.
MacArthur being a healthy scratch. I don't know what Toronto was thinking on that one. But anyway.
And that was on a chair, a puck over the glass.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, they hemmed Boston in. He was exhausted.
Well, it's not a bad strategy. We can go with that. So that was, okay, everybody in Ottawa can breathe again because we got a split.
We lost home ice, as they say, but.
We lost on home ice, but whatever. We got the split.
Beat it back.
Whatever.
We got the split. So now we go to Boston, which was yesterday.
Yep.
Yesterday.
Thank God I didn't go to Boston.
Marathon day.
Boston.
Yeah.
Marathon. Patriots the Celtics day. Had a big game the night before.
The Red Sox were playing at 11.
Yeah. Like just. Tradition.
Oh, the city is a madhouse. Yeah. I was actually, one of the journalists I was reading on Twitter was, they were staying out almost in Foxborough. Where Gillette Stadium is for the Patriots.
That's a long
drive into downtown Boston. I mean, why not just stay on the Cape for crying out loud? Be cheaper and nicer because it's Cape Cod. I'm biased.
Per diem.
I'm biased. I like Cape Cod. So game three, Boro is out. Boro got hurt in game two. So Ben Harper is in. Bit of a surprise that it's not Clayson, but it does make sense because he's bigger and does play a bit better of a physical game.
And my goodness, is he ever looking good, fitting right in.
Yeah.
Harper is much more mobile than Boro. Much more mobile than Boro.
But not as purely physical.
A little less of a pest. Correct.
Yeah. There's no fear factor.
There's advantage. Mm.
The players are genuinely afraid of going up the side when they know that Boro might be there.
Well, Boston certainly mad at him.
That. Well, yeah. We'll see.
You know who else is in this game? Darby? Tim Peel.
Oh. Do we have Dan O'Rourke too?
Which, no.
Oh, my goodness.
But this, does this ever explain the freaking game?
And the head official was, McCreary.
McCreary.
Yeah. Oh, great. We're doomed.
Yeah.
We're doomed. Doomed, I tell you.
And they both call a completely different game.
So Hoffman scores to open the game.
What a pass.
I cannot believe that he pulled off that move.
Ah, not bad.
Well, okay. Well, you're talking about the Forsberg move
from
Hoffman. But that outlet pass by Karlsson.
Where on the first goal or the third goal?
That's the first one to.
And Hoffman was way ahead of the defenders. That had to be a set play.
I don't know how Hoff, it's got to be, but. So I'm just going to go and shoot this over everybody and have it land on your stick.
I thought that was the third. That was the first goal.
That
was the
first
goal. Was the first one?
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting confused.
Beautiful.
Just beautiful.
And the fact that all the mainstream media is actually talking about this.
Yeah.
Well, that was a filthy goal.
Frig. It was beautiful.
Pierre LeBrun was on the radio today, and he said, he actually put it out there. Yes, I voted for Erik Karlsson for the Norse.
Oh, did he?
For his first place vote.
First place.
Oh, and third place for Hart.
Third place for the Hart, too. Yeah.
Which he deserves to be in that conversation. No, he doesn't. But
it's nice to have the mention.
If he gets nominated for the Hart, I'm extremely happy. Yeah.
Hoffman scored the first one. Broussard scored to make it 2-0. And Broussard again.
That was a filthy move by Karlsson to go around the net, too, and just feed him.
There you go. And then
Tuukka Rask's skate had a problem, right?
Oh, yeah.
Blade came off or something happened?
Oh, well, why didn't they blow it dead like they did for Chara?
I'm surprised. You're
supposed to blow it dead. Yeah, we'll get to that in a bit. That's probably what grinds my gears for this week. And then Hoffman scores on the power play to make it 3-0. 3-0! 3-0 after one.
So you should be able to sit back and relax.
That's where I was just like, yeah, okay, we're good.
And no goals in the second period. Okay. All right.
Let's just get through this.
Then there were 3 more goals in the third period. Yeah. Unfortunately, they were all by the Bruins. And it's a tie game.
And including a Bobby Ryan flub / yard sale where he decides to put all his equipment on the ice.
That was pretty funny.
That was bad.
In hindsight, it was funny. At the time, it was frustrating.
It's just like, oh, come on.
he fell. His stick goes. His gloves go.
Oops.
That was great.
And then Bobby Ryan scores in overtime. I was working last night, but I got in my car. I had turned the key in the ignition, and the radio came on because the radio was always on, and it was on TSN 1200. I hadn't even started the engine. I had just turned the key. Scores. Wow. I was like, well, I got in the car at just the right moment. I was pretty happy about that.
The right one is 3-1. I'm like, well, this is tied. Like, you just had a feeling of this game.
So that's the end of the game summaries. Ottawa's ahead 2-1. In the series.
Yep.
Game 4 is tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
And Karlsson had another incredible game defensively as well.
Another.
Amazing defensive plays he was making.
I'd even go as far as to say yet another.
Yet another.
Because they're, you said it earlier, and I think you're very right, that we're spoiled. We get to see this all the time. And that's why we don't understand why people can't appreciate. I got into a conversation with the Leafer the other day. He's like, yeah, well, Erik Karlsson's pretty good. But I went, no, Erik Karlsson is not pretty good. Erik Karlsson is a generational player who Bobby Orr says is better than he was.
People are basing their facts on something from 2 years ago.
Yeah. If Bobby Orr says he's better than I was.
Yeah.
You can't dispute that. You just can't. Oh, well, you know, Austin Matthews. I'm like, yeah, Austin Matthews is a very good player. A very, very good player. But he's not a generational one.
He might be.
He might be. We don't know yet. But give credit where credit is due.
Right. Exactly.
And don't look now.
I did not know that Karlsson had this level in the playoffs. This is never seen anything like this, not in the Olympics or anything.
Well, he's also older.
I think.
Yeah.
But he's older. And the last time we were in the playoffs, he was still recovering from his
ankle.
Achilles.
Or Achilles heel.
No. It was Berger run 2 years ago.
Oh. But he still wasn't.
He had a back injury.
He still wasn't moving the way he does now.
And the thing is, he's not 100% right now, too.
No.
Which is incredible.
That means he could get better. Wouldn't that
be stupid 82 game season. But don't look now. Look at the Sens power play. After probably one of the worst we've ever seen.
It's now tied for the best in the playoffs.
Yep.
When it matters.
Front presence.
That's the key.
Wow. Isn't that what we were saying?
The majority of these goals is net front presence.
Isn't that what we were saying earlier this year?
Yep.
At least some of us.
And a lot of times it's Bobby Ryan standing right in front with maybe MacArthur, like a right in front, but kind of high slot.
To the side, yeah. But he gets in there.
Yeah.
He's going to stop the battles after the whistle, though. It makes me very nervous.
Well.
Yeah, but no, it's Ryan, Burrows, Smith, Stahlberg.
All pretty
always
good
in front of the net.
As they should be. That's their role, and they're doing it. And I like that.
Pageau, haven't noticed him.
Pageau, yeah.
I think he's been playing a very defensive role, so
his minutes are down.
Well, that's because we're playing four lines at almost equalized, or not quite equalized time.
But the fact that he went down in depth.
Is this a good time to bring on Ian, then we can go to players after?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that. We're joined once again by TSN 1200's host, Ian Mendez. Ian, thanks for coming on with us again in this very busy time of the season.
Hey, guys. Thanks thanks for thinking of me, and always a pleasure.
A major addition to the lineup just in time for the playoffs was the return of Clark MacArthur. This was a tremendous feat for him. It was completely unexpected, at least for everybody in the fandom circle. I don't know if there was any sort of hint for it in the news media, but in the interviews we've had with that I've seen with him, he's talked about it being very difficult road to come back. But how difficult has it been for the team, do you know, to be able to put him back in?
Well, I think, you know, and I spoke at length to Pierre Dorion about this, and they always said this was never our call. So it was never like Pierre Dorion was sitting there saying, oh boy, should we put him in? They left it in the hands of doctors. And if they could get people independently to clear Clark MacArthur, they would be comfortable with it. That they said that from day one. If an independent doctor says Clark can play, we'll play. And then obviously they have their own doctors and their own medical staff, but they felt like this was never their decision. So I think once it got to the point where he got medically cleared and he was ready to come back and willing and able, I don't think they really had a choice at that point. I think they kind of absolved themselves. I know there was always a segment of the population, the fan base, saying, oh boy, Sens, what are you doing letting this guy come back in? Hey, they can easily point back to a medical report that they were given in mid to late March, basically saying, we, from a medical standpoint, believe Clark MacArthur can play and he's not putting himself at further risk. And so if they're comfortable with that, I think, and as long as, again, as long as Clark is comfortable with that, I think you're ready to go. And I think the other thing to remember is that if Clark MacArthur was cleared medically by independent doctors, and then the Sens told him, no, you know what? We're not comfortable. We're not going to let you play. I can guarantee you the Players Association would get involved. The NHLPA would get involved on behalf of Clark, and then this thing could turn ugly. But it never got to that point because they obviously felt like this guy had been he'd been cleared to go and ready to go. And so here we are, three games, midway through the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and there's Clark MacArthur.
Well, one player is certainly glad to see MacArthur back is Bobby Ryan. And man, who would have thought that game one, Stanley Cup playoffs, the Bobby chant start up after the season that he had. So my question for you, Ian, is what is your thoughts on the play of Bobby Ryan? Obviously a big dramatic change from what we saw in the regular season. Is what we're seeing now the real Bobby Ryan, or is this an anomaly? What do you think?
Well, that's a great question. I think whatever it is, whatever we're seeing here the first half of the series against Boston, that's the Bobby Ryan that I think a lot of Ottawa fans were hoping that they would be getting when they traded for him in the summer of 2013. And we've seen flashes of it for sure, but it has never been something that he could sustain. Like even, I think it was back in the middle of December. If you guys, I'm sure you'll remember, he scored a goal in four straight games, but in every game, it was like the puck was like bouncing off his shoulder or bouncing off. Like he was scoring goals, but it wasn't like he was doing anything that made you feel like he was generating chances on his own or creating confidence. And I've always felt that in getting to know Bobby a little bit, he's always been a real kind of confidence is the motor that drives him. And when he doesn't have it, it's really difficult. And I think there's a lot of people that can relate to that in whatever your field is or whatever your passion is. If you don't have confidence in something, you feel hesitant and you just don't quite feel sure. And I think that's why I kind of like, I've always had a soft spot for Bobby Ryan, is I've always liked the person. Like I understand the $7 million salary and I understand the underproduction. Like, trust me, I'm all on board. I understand he's underachieved in his time in Ottawa, but there's always been this great human interest story there. And I've always been fascinated by Bobby as a person. I've always thought he's overcome so much. And so I watch him on the ice in the first couple of games of the series. And I think even in that Islanders game on the Sunday, when he picked that corner, like, I was like, well, there's Bobby Ryan. There he is. There's the shot. And then we saw it in that game one when he went around Zdeno Chara, I think it was, and cut in front of Tuukka Rask and outweighed him. Like, wow, that was as nice as a goal as he scored in his time in Ottawa, certainly in the last year and a half or two. And here's the guy that we're seeing. And I know he had that gaffe yesterday, or in game three, I should say, where he for whatever reason, he lost sight of the puck and he blew a tire and he lost his stick and he lost his glove. And they had a goal come off it off Dave Backes, but to be able to respond and score the overtime winner, boy, like I don't think you could have scripted a better start to the Stanley Cup playoffs for Bobby Ryan. In fact, I think, like you said, with the Bobby chant, like if you would have sat me down on a Monday just before the playoffs and said, hey, just an FYI, in the first couple games of playoffs, they're going to be chanting his name. He's going to have an overtime winner. He's going to score another highlight reel goal. He's going to set up Clark MacArthur with a goal. I might be like, okay, yeah, that's a great piece of fan fiction there. That's probably not going to – that's not going to unfold. And here we are, and it's absolutely unfolded. So I think for now, the one thing I've learned with Bobby is when he's hot and he's confident, you got to ride that. And, I mean, does it last for the entire series? Does it last for another game? Does it last for 3 weeks? I don't know. But right now, I'd be utilizing this guy on the power play in the first unit. I'd be utilizing him – with Clark MacArthur and Derek Brassard, I'd be putting him in spots to make him successful, because right now he's feeling it. And when a guy like that, who's got that type of pedigree, is feeling it, I say you let him touch the puck as much as he can.
That's great. Now, someone who's always getting the guys the pucks, and especially with Bobby Ryan, it's Erik Karlsson, who's really leading the charge in the playoffs. Now, as we saw this team without him for the first time in 3 or 4 years, when he missed a couple of games, what does he mean to the team? And then globally or league wide, what do you think the people who were either against Karlsson for the Norris may now have changed their minds around him?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's interesting too, like even just in the last year, I think even though Erik led the league in assists last year and became the first defenseman since Bobby Orr to do that, there was still a sense, even in this market, forget the national market for a second, but just in this market, there was still that little sliver of, yeah, but can you really win with this guy? Right? Like that was the narrative on Karlsson. Yeah, sure, he could put up points. And, you know, it's interesting that at the start of the year, he had 82 points last year, and in a pregame show before the season started, I had Brendan Bell, and Brendan's been a wonderful addition to our pregame roundtables, and I think he brings in tremendous wealth and insight, and he's very well connected with players in the game still. And I asked Brendan Bell during a pregame show before the season, I said, could Erik Karlsson get 100 points in a season? And I thought he had the best answer. Brendan looked at me and said, yes, he can, but I don't think you want to see that Erik Karlsson. If you see the Erik Karlsson gets 100 points, he said, that's a guy that's going to be completely irresponsible defensively. And yeah, he could probably run and gun his way to 100 points, but this ain't going to be a playoff team. And you know what? That couldn't have been a more prophetic statement, because here we are in the middle of April, and Erik Karlsson didn't get to 80 points, let alone 100. He got to 70, and I think we can all agree this is the best the guy has ever played. And I think he's taken his game to a completely different level. And I think what's really important too is that in game two, yeah, there was that breakdown with Craig Anderson behind the net on the power play, and he went out, and I mean, he lit up Derek Brassard. He lit him up. And I think if Erik does that last year or 2 or 3 years ago, I think that's kind of met with a little bit maybe of an eye roll, or it's met with, yeah, man, that's great, but what are you really doing to make this team better? Like, what are you doing other than being flashy offensively? This guy's different. And that's the first time that in game two, I was like, wow, that was Daniel Alfredsson. You know, we've been waiting for 4 or 5 years. We'd be like, hey, you know, Alfie, he lived with Alfie and he's close with Alfie. Alfie's back. We'll just wait till Alfie kind of gets his ability to mold him. That's the first time that I was like, well, there he is. That's Alfie. That is Alfie 2.0. And that's what he's done. He's become this one, like, he's still the best defenseman in the game, but now he's become like a legit leader and a guy that when the chips are down in the seventh game, and I didn't even know, you know, when Chicago came to town in early March, we talked about this on the radio and we said, who would you rather have for a game seven, Duncan Keith or Erik Karlsson? And I'll tell you what, in the first week of March, I was definitely leaning towards Duncan Keith. I think I said as much on the radio, but I'll tell you today, if I had a game seven, I'm not, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I think I'm taking Erik Karlsson over Duncan Keith. And Duncan's won 3 Stanley Cups, and Duncan has done some great things. I think Erik Karlsson is now the best defender in the game, and I don't even think it's close. And you can give Burns the Norris. You can go ahead and give it to him. But I think we all know 100% when we look in the National Hockey League that Erik Karlsson is definitively the best defenseman.
Now, follow up with that, because one of my theories is, and yes, Karlsson's been great defensively this year. Now, is there a possibility that last year, because everyone's saying that he didn't buy in, is it possible that he was doing exactly what Dave Cameron told him to do? Just when you get it, just go, which seemed to be more of Cameron's style.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, right? Last year, Ottawa doesn't get great goaltending. Ottawa has Kyle Turris out for a good chunk of the season with a high ankle sprain. Like, they had a lot of things working against them last year, but it's tough to say, right? Like, people will say, well, he didn't buy into Dave Cameron or whatever happened there. Hey, all I know is that when Guy Boucher came in, one of the first things he did was he had to get Carlson to buy in because he was selling something different than Dave Cameron. Like, Guy Boucher definitely came in selling something different, which was, we need structure here. And the only way that Guy was going to get structure was to get the head of the snake, so to speak, to buy in. If Carlson sits down with Guy Boucher guys in August and is like, yeah, man, just so you know, I'm gunning for 100 points this year. Just so you know, that's how things run around here. We're having a different conversation today. And he bought in. And I always thought that one of the neatest things this year was, remember, there was the World Cup of Hockey in September. And the Senators started training camp, and they had a huge Guy Boucher's first meeting with the team, or one of his first meetings. And Erik Karlsson, with the 5 and a 6 hour difference, whatever it was in Stockholm, he video conferenced in via FaceTime into that meeting. And I thought, wow, that's a really important step for a captain in a meeting where he's overseas, and no one would have begrudged Karlsson if he was like, hey, I'm focused on Team Sweden. But he didn't do that. He got in and he got on that video conference call. And I think that was the sign that, okay, this guy's already bought into what the coach is selling. And when it comes to Dave Cameron, it's really tough to say, right? Because Dave was using him a ton. He had his 82-point season with Dave Cameron. He had a wonderful season under Dave Cameron. But I think the issue was the rest of the group, it just wasn't working. Like, you guys saw the breakouts last year. You guys saw the willy-nilly, you know, run and gun. And, hey, it was fun to watch. But I don't think that there was the structure there. So it's really tough to say whether or not he bought in. I think he was just doing what he – I don't really blame Dave Cameron if that was his MO was to tell Carlson, hey, when you got to go, because he's a one man breakout more often than not. The issue last year was they had guys slotted in the wrong spots, whether it was Patty Wierkosz, guys of that nature that just for whatever reason just never really got it going. And this year they completely overhauled the back end, and more importantly, they brought in a system of stability, or at least it felt like there was some stability on the back end with Guy Boucher.
At the start of the playoffs, Ottawa was deemed to be the underdog in this series. And even though they had home ice advantage, even though they finished ahead of Boston in the standings, Ottawa was being given the underdog status by a lot of odds makers. Still are, actually, even ahead 2-1. So I saw one site that said that they were still the underdog, which I didn't make any sense. Why is nobody giving the Ottawa Senators any respect, do you think?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think, one, if you listen to the advanced stats analytics community, they'll tell you that the Bruins are the superior team, that over the course of 82 games, Boston was one of the better possession teams, and that over the course of a seven-game series, they should be better than Ottawa, provided they get goaltending, provided they get the type of possession numbers you usually get out of the Bergeron line. It's tough, though, especially when they're so banged up on the back end. I've always thought this was a toss-up series. I think it would be really even more of a toss-up if Torrey Krug and Brandon Carlo played, because Boston, to me, and Ottawa, I thought it was a coin flip. If you told me at the start of this series that every game would be decided in the first three, every game would be decided by one goal, and the winning goal would be scored either in overtime or with less than 3 minutes left, I wouldn't have been shocked, and that's exactly how it's played out. So it's a very even series. I think Boston gets a little bit of an edge because there are some guys on that team like David Krejci, like Patrice Bergeron, like Brad Marchand, who are still very productive players in the NHL, but have also had postseason success with the Bruins. They went to the Cup and won it in 2011. They went back to the Cup in 2013. So I think when you get a group of those guys together versus an Ottawa team that really is deprived of postseason success outside of a guy that now is not part of the top 12 and Chris Kelly, who's won a Stanley Cup. I mean, Victor Stahlberg won a Stanley Cup, but he's not really in the top six or the top nine. And Alex Burrows went to the Cup, but again, he didn't win it, and he's not, again, probably not in the top six, depending on how you look at things. The core of this team has never won anything together. They have not won anything. Versus the core of Boston, which has, coupled with the sort of advanced stats community saying, wow, Boston's a really good team, and Boston might be a team to fear in the playoffs. I think you put all those things together in a pot, and the fact that Ottawa down the stretch really stumbled and their analytics weren't very good and they were getting outshot, I think, on a number of occasions, I think that kind of led to the, hey, maybe Boston's the favorite here. But the one X factor and the one that we didn't know going into the series was Carlson going to be 100% healthy? Was he going to be 70% healthy? And in game one that they lost, he looked like he was like 60 or 70%. And now magically in games two and three, when it feels like Carlson has looked like 100%, I don't think it's a coincidence that that Ottawa has won those two games.
One last question, Ian. And, you know, this had a lot of focus as the season wound down. But looking at how the playoffs have started and all the series across the league, do you think home ice and the seating mean as much as they used to anymore?
I don't. I really don't. And it's a great question, right? Because I think back in the day, like when I was like in the 80s and 90s, when I was really getting into hockey as a kid, like you would watch TV and you'd be like, wow, like it's going to be tough to go into the Boston Garden and win a game, right? Because it was a smaller rink, or I think Buffalo was also a smaller rink, and Chicago. Like every rink was so unique. And it was so different, and it brought a different set of elements, and in some cases, a different dimension on the ice. And now, I mean, they're all cookie cutters. Like, look at the New York Rangers, for example. They were one of the best road teams in the National Hockey League this year, and they weren't really good at home. Like, I'm not a huge believer in home ice advantage. In fact, if you ask me, I know this sounds silly, I would rather play a Game 7 on the road than I would ever want to play a Game 7 at home. And I understand that probably the numbers dictate that Game 7 teams win on home ice. I always feel that there's this like unspoken pressure that comes with having home ice advantage. And even in, look at the Ottawa series, right? Like as soon as Boston won Game 1, it was like you worked 82 games to get home ice advantage. And it's gone in the span of, you know, 12 minutes in the third period of Game 1 where Ottawa had the lead and then suddenly boom, they tied it, and boom, they won it. And you're like, well, we just worked 82 games, and hey, Boston just came in and took it from us. Like, gone. And I don't know. I would rather – boy, like I said, it's silly to say that I would rather not have home ice advantage, but I do feel like when you start a playoff series on the road, there's way less pressure on you. Like, you go in – not that you go in with house money, but you always go in, and if you lose game one, you're like, hey, no problem. No problem, because if we win game two, we've accomplished our goal, which is to get the split. And then you can still convince yourself, if you lose game two, you're like, hey, we're going home, and all we got to do is take care of home ice. So to me, as the road team, it's almost a win-win situation regardless of how you come out after the first two games, versus if you're the home team and you don't sweep the first two games at home, you've lost home ice advantage because now it's a best of five, and there's kind of a seed of doubt that gets planted in your mind as to whether or not you can win this series as the favorite. So I know it sounds silly. Hey, ask the Washington Capitals. They'll tell you what it's like to have home ice advantage in a game seven. It seems to mean nothing. And I think that they would trade home ice advantage in order to have a lot of that external pressure sort of taken off their shoulders, which seems to be weighing them down right now.
Great. I agree totally with that. Ian, thanks so much for your words of wisdom and for your time this evening. And it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Anytime, guys. My pleasure.
Good night.
Thanks, Ian. Good night.
All right. Good night, guys.
Thanks.
Bye. So let's talk players. We started out with Pajot. He seems to be not having a good series.
Yep, I agree.
Is it just the Boston is outsizing him in his typical role? I'm not sure.
But I've barely noticed him. But
he hasn't been on the ice much.
But I've also barely noticed Bergeron.
True. I sure have noticed Marchand, but
I think you're focusing on him. He gets a couple chances a game, that's it.
Hmm. I guess.
Man of the day, Craig Anderson.
You know what? not going to say he's been bad, but he's seemed human.
Well, he's always seemed human. But
it's like beast mode was not activated there correct. In game three.
Yep. He hasn't been as good as he can be. And he hasn't been as good as he's needed to be. But the team continues to...
Tukarask has been the better of the two so far.
Yeah, especially in game one. He was incredible in game one. But we're not getting a lot of shots against, so I don't know if that's just screwing up with Anderson's timing, because when you're getting 20 shots against instead of 45 from last year... And
he's not getting worked enough, so he's not getting in the groove.
Yeah, so...
Could be.
Who else?
Bobby Ryan?
Bobby Ryan, 2 goals, 2 assists. Broussard, 2 goals, 2 assists.
Big game, Brass showing up, finally.
Big game, yeah, finally.
What do you think of Burrows? When we traded for Burrows, I said, I don't care so much about the regular season. I want to see what he can bring in the playoffs.
Nothing.
And I haven't seen anything.
Nothing. Nothing. I would figure that he would either chirp guys or anything. There's nothing there.
And that's disappointing, because that's what I thought was his X factor.
Yeah. So who knows? Who knows with that? Hopefully it'll continue on, because
Stauber?
Zach Smith is doing better than Burrows.
Yes.
At getting under the skin and all of that stuff. Victor Stahlberg is such a great pickup.
Yep. It was a very wise play.
Just redefining your depth.
Well, he's playing well at what he's doing.
And he's fast.
Yeah.
He's fast. He's big. I know that he went for a stick instead of the player on one of the goals against, which.
Well, he went back for a stick, but yeah. The other player who wasn't in game one and was quite mad about it, Ryan DeZingle. I was hoping for something big from him.
Yeah.
He just seems to be soft right at the key moment. Because he's got so much speed, he just seems to lose the last minute puck battle.
Yep. I don't know when the last time it was that he even scored.
No.
Don't know.
I'd like to see Colin White, but I know it's such a dangerous place to put him in when he has been playing.
No. Well, you also have to take somebody out.
So maybe if we go deeper and someone gets injured, we might see him. But
if one of the scorers gets hurt, he comes in.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody else who can fill that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. You don't want him in the bottom line. I want to see you
in the top six. If there was an injury in the bottom six, who would you put in? Chris Kelly?
Neal? Kelly or Wingles?
Or Tommy Wingles?
I wouldn't put White in a bottom six role. No. What's the point?
No.
Waste.
I feel bad for Chris Neal, but listen, this team has proven the point that winning is the most important thing. Because I thought he was going to play in the last game at home. And they needed the points, so no.
Yeah.
It really feels like a different feel. And what were they saying on the radio? Is this something like that the team has a spirit now? Or personality? I don't know if you heard any of
that. Yeah, I did hear it on the radio a little bit this morning.
It's not the feel-good moments of, well, here's Chris Phillips and we've dragged him out on the ice enough so that he can have games played. And
there's a good spirit in with the team.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm enjoying this. This series can still go the other way.
And it goes not just through the players, but through management and everything. That was something that Pierre Maguire was saying on the radio this morning. That really impressed with Ottawa and their spirits and their, you know, the demeanor and the attitude amongst the team. It's been very positive, and he says it's not like that with other teams sometimes. You know, some teams are winning on their talent. Some teams are winning on goaltending, and Ottawa's winning a lot, you know, just with their positive attitude from around the whole team.
To use a Brian Murrayism, character.
Yeah.
I like it. We should read an email, because we only have one. Do you want to read this one, Ben? It's good and short. Yeah.
You go. His last goal was March 18th.
Oh.
Okay. Who's?
Ryan DeZingle
against Montreal.
Jeez.
Wow. That's more recently than I would have expected, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I know.
I was thinking more February.
Not great.
Anywho.
So we've asked for email. Stukadoo. here's your email.
That was it. That was the entire body of the message. But I will say, Stu, thank you for the donation you sent. I'm sorry I forgot to mention that off the beginning of the show.
Yes.
I'm a little off tonight, and I didn't write it down. So if I don't write it down, it never happened.
Stu, lives in the GTA and wanted to come up and watch one of the games. So I specifically want to watch game two.
Oh.
So I saw that, and I had earlier access to tickets than he did. So
I got to pee again.
So I was able to grab him 5 tickets, actually, up in the 300. So
to a game?
So he came and went with his family.
Oh, right on.
And picked a heck of a game to go to. It was full emotions and a win.
Excellent. So you got to meet him, I presume?
Actually, no, I didn't see him at the game. I haven't met him before in Toronto, though.
Oh, okay. All right. That was very generous of you. Nicely done. Nicely done. That was the only email we have to read. And while pans away for a moment or two, we'll have to fill some air. The one thing that really drove me insane so far in the playoffs, of course, I'm going to say refereeing, but I'm going to be really specific with where I'm having a problem with officiating. And what I'm specifically annoyed with is the inconsistency of when they will blow a whistle over something.
You mean like Chara losing a skate blade?
Chara loses a skate blade. And they blow the whistle to kill the play when that didn't happen for Boro earlier this year. But worse, Zach Werenski takes a puck to the right below his eye socket, breaks his orbital bone. He's lying on the ice holding his face. No whistle. Pittsburgh scores.
Yeah.
He's obviously injured. And if you'd seen the pictures of him afterwards, he couldn't play in overtime because his eye was swollen shut.
Yep.
But nope, that's not an injury. That's not a worthy reason to stop the play.
Look,
losing a skate blade apparently is.
That was so ridiculous.
The only consistent calls you're going to get in this league is if your stick breaks because you get hit or the puck goes over the glass.
Well, not necessarily, because Gallagher broke Lundqvist's stick.
Oh, that's right. And it resulted in a goal against a little bit later.
I missed that one.
The refereeing is a joke. I understand a little bit what you're trying to do in the playoffs. You kind of want them to let them play, but
we're just talking about Werenski versus Chara.
So I've got concern about leaving, but on Werenski, if he's got a broken face, why was he allowed to enter the game again?
They didn't know his face was broken at the time.
Shouldn't you check if his face is broken?
I think it was only determined by x-rays later on. There was nothing displaced, I don't think. It's very badly swollen.
Rub some dirt on it.
But I don't think it was displaced. Because if it was displaced, then his eye would be in danger. And you'd know.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
So that's on that.
Excuse me.
The Tim Peel game, NPS, that the penalty call against Boston. And I was with Canuck at the time. I was like, that's not a penalty.
That's weak.
That's not a penalty to
that's,
call.
That's the one.
The one that Bobby overtime? Ryan. Yeah, okay. It was not a penalty.
Well, they either don't call it or call them both.
But Tim Peel is so erratic.
Yes.
That the players have no idea what to do.
That's a very good word, actually. Erratic. I like that one.
Like, I think it was either Mathot or Phaneuf. I think it was Mathot. Just slash chair right in the hands.
It was either Mathot or I think it might have been Phaneuf.
Was it Phaneuf?
But I saw it.
It was one of them. It was like, that's a blatant slashing. They let that go. Ottawa's on a penalty kill. And I think it was Phaneuf again. Does it again. Penalty. It's like,
yeah.
Inconsistent.
Well, if you've been following Twitter today, most of the rabble-rousing Boston sports media types are convinced that the officials are out to get the Bruins in this series.
Which is so, it's so weird. Eh? It's such a weird.
And
in the past, we've said that like the refs are biased.
Well, I will freely admit, I haven't been watching these games because I've been too busy. I've been sort of I've been listening to them or I've been catching up on them afterwards. But do you think, between the two of you, that Ottawa has been, for want of a better term, victimized the way that we kind of felt we had been in the past?
Not this year.
Okay.
But this year at all. It's been ridiculous.
Oh, it's been terrible.
Like, they're bad. They're bad.
It's been I know that Mark Mathot slashed at a couple of people in the last game because they were slashing specifically at his left hand. They weren't slashing at his stick. They weren't slashing at his hands. They were going specifically for his left hand. And he was getting fed up with it.
Yeah.
So Hey, don't slash at my hand. I won't slash at yours. Or elbow you in the face.
But Mathod is actually really nasty to play against. I've never noticed it as much.
Yeah.
But like, he'll cross check you in the back.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
But everyone's doing it.
But we like this. Now, the other, to just take a look at some of the other series very briefly.
Sure.
Chicago down 2-0 to Nashville.
3-0.
Sorry. See, I wrote this a couple of days ago. Chicago down 3-0.
Unbelievable.
I haven't had anything to drink tonight. I'm slurring because I'm just tired.
In the first two games, Pecorine had 2 assists. Chicago had 0 points.
In the first two
zero
games.
Zero goals.
Zero goals. 0 points.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
What?
I would never have seen that coming. In fact, didn't we all say, sorry, Nashville, when we were giving our series predictions?
I was saying that for sure. This is completely unexpected.
No, we never watch those games. But if Nashville gets, we'll continue
Chicago. You kind of think. And Minnesota is down 3-0 to St. Louis. Now, Minnesota was sliding, though.
I'm not as surprised by this, but I am surprised.
At the end of the season, they were sliding.
Yeah. Now, again, I haven't been watching many of the other games anyways, but Minnesota has outshot, outchanced, just done everything
Bruce Boudreau's team.
Statistically better than St. Louis. The one thing that's been keeping St. Louis in, Jake Allen.
Fredericton, New Brunswick boy.
What the hell?
Whose new goalie coach is?
Who is it?
Yeah.
The former Ottawa one?
No, the name just escaped me. But it
was Corsi, and I don't know.
He has a new goalie coach, and that's who's brought it around. It just blanked on
it. But I know that there's because they had a newborn, and then they sent him home because I think there was probably some issues at that point.
Good New Brunswick boy, Jake Allen.
Well,
you and your
finally living up to his contract.
Hey, but jeez, who saw that, right?
Oh, I wasn't. I wasn't seeing that at all. Now, I have a slight bias against St. Louis because there's one particular person who I'm around who is a Blues fan who I can't stand.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
I admit it. I can't stand them.
Dad.
My father doesn't like hockey, actually. My mother does. My mother watches hockey. My father doesn't. But one other question. Is it just me, or are there a lot of overtime games in this first round?
There are more.
A lot of them.
It's been pointed out.
Okay. Yesterday was the first time in four games went to overtime since 19-dickety.
Yeah.
Oh, all four games.
It's either 91 or 85 or something like that.
I mean, it's exciting to watch when it's not your team, but when it's your team, it's just gut-wrenching.
Oh, yeah. It's Martin Brodeur.
Really?
Oh, there's two of them, actually.
And Ty Conklin. Those are the two coaches. Yes, but yes. Martin Brodeur has been the one who's been working with Jake Allen. So it kind of makes a bit more sense now, doesn't it?
Yeah. What else is going on? Let's do the West first. Oilers.
Yeah, what's this? What's the,
so the 2-1. Series right now is 2-1 Oilers over San Jose. One game they won 2-0.
Yeah.
With two shorthanded goals. One they won 1-0. Zach Cassian.
Crazy. Amazing.
Zach Cassian? Yeah, Cassian.
Now, how did they get him from Montreal?
It was either waivers.
Was it waivers?
Waivers or a trade. Is he? Well, he just needed to clean up, right? Which he did.
Yes. Finally.
Ducks 3-0 over Calgary. Curtis Lazar still not seen anywhere. Not overly surprising there.
I'm not as surprised by that.
So kind of looking at the teams and where things are going right now, Nashville's got a real good chance at the West.
You didn't finish up the East here.
We're going to go back to the East.
Okay.
Habs Rangers, real tight. We've got to pay attention to this because if we get past Bruins, the winner.
If you get past, you have to play these guys.
Yep. Whoever wins this, prefer our chances against the Rangers, to be honest with you.
Yep.
Radulov's on fire, so it's not Weber.
It'll be interesting.
It's all Radulov.
In what I've been able to follow from this series, and I was listening to the game on the way out here. It was on TSN radio here in Ottawa. I have to give credit, by the way, to the TSN radio guys in Montreal. They aren't as big homers as the national television broadcast is.
Yep.
the national television broadcast is more homerish to the Habs than their local radio broadcast. Their local radio broadcast was actually pretty good. I was impressed. Oh. But
now I hadn't. We only saw the one game because we've been going to them. Not bad.
Who?
The broadcast. Oh. Even with Bob Cole, not bad.
Well, Bob Cole's announced calls of the Saturday game.
They were fantastic.
He's still behind the play and everything, but
it's over there.
I would rather Bob Cole than Paul Romanek.
Oh, yeah, Romanek just makes mistakes.
He's terrible.
Yeah, I know.
He's just bad.
And it sounds like he's taking a dump every time makes a call.
It's over.
Ouch. That's a really bad mental image. Can we just leave that one?
He's Garth.
Other Eastern series?
I guess we'll talk about the Leafs. What the hell, Washington? What are you doing?
Choking?
This should not be where it is.
Did Ottawa pass the torch of losing to the Leafs to the Caps?
No, in this one series. Do it three more times and we'll talk. But
Washington is trying to run and gun with Toronto, and that is not how you beat them. Unbelievable. Now, I know they've been coasting the last couple weeks of the season, but come on. That's on coaching.
Hit them.
Play your game the way you played in the regular season.
In the double overtime game, Freddie Anderson was the difference. He was incredible.
Which is, he is that once in a while, but he's also mediocre more than once in a while. So we'll see if they can keep that up. We forgot Columbus, Pittsburgh.
Oh, no, I was holding that one for last.
Oh, you want to hold that one for last. All right, sorry.
That's just ridiculous.
So Pittsburgh might just win this whole Stanley Cup by playing 16 games.
Yep. Although they're losing right now. Let's see. Update.
Yeah,
here they come. Yeah, they're going to come back.
They're coming back.
Yep.
It was 2-0 for 2 or 3-0 for Columbus.
They just will goals.
Like, just they put a schmuck with Crosby because who knows who's hurt or whatever. It was a call up of some sort. Hat trick. Just incredible. 1-2. Uh-oh. No, it was 3-0 Blue Jackets.
What happened to his hand?
Oh, 3-0. Hockey is safe and right.
Yeah. So leaving hockey. We've proven that rule, twice now?
This was a whole thing about yesterday. It was just like, this isn't a championship. The Sens aren't a championship team. They're not going to do well because you can't blow leads like this. And then I checked the rest of the schedule, and every other game was like this.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Oh yeah. It's
like blown leads everywhere, overtimes everywhere. This series could easily be 3-0 Ottawa or 0-3.
Yeah. It's called parody.
Yeah.
Parody or parody?
It's a parody. But, the refereeing makes it a bit of a comic relief opera, but excuse me.
Now if Chicago especially if they get swept, but if Chicago and Washington lose in the first round, that may have, that may create a mass, and especially being in an expansion year, may create a massive ripple effect around the whole league. If one, if not both of them, decide to retool or blow it up.
Mm-hmm. Depending on what they decide not to keep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
his expansion years just mess everything up. But.
Well, especially, it could be difficult for Chicago. There, my voice is back, at least briefly.
This episode is brought to you by Sepikol.
Exactly. It could be interesting for Chicago because for the past, 6, 7, 10 years almost, they've always been losing good players because they can't afford to keep them.
Yep.
So if they decide to do that again, I don't know what they have in the pipeline, but
I think the pipeline is pretty strong.
Rearranging that talent out into the rest of the league again for draft picks or whatever could make things a little interesting. Because when you look at it this year compared to last year, there were no Canadian teams in the playoffs last year. This year there were 5. Like there's been such a big swing in who's in and who's out this year. Not just in terms of Canadian teams, just overall. Yeah. I mean, the Atlantic Division was almost backwards.
Yep.
Right. No, well, the Kings missed because they were missing their goalie. We can hear all that, by the way.
Sorry.
Still doesn't move. That's fine. Sorry. This is a little bit of Foley for
you guys. Lozenge against my teeth.
Tampa Bay lost out because...
No Stamkos.
1 point out.
Yeah. Well, New York Islanders.
Because they didn't fire what's-his-face ahead of time.
And they lost Tavares for the last 8 games.
Oh, did they? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
One point. 1 point.
Yep.
It's insane. I like it because, again, granted, like, did they even do the draft lottery yet?
No.
No.
When is that?
After the first round, isn't it?
Okay. Because I'm just like, I haven't heard anything about it.
I think they usually do it after the first round to give you sort of a tied over kind of thing.
Does Vegas get a spot
in? They're in the top three. They pick top three.
Yeah, I think, but they're not in the lottery for 1 and 2? Something like that?
Yeah, they're in the lottery. They'll pick either first, second, or third.
Oh, I thought they couldn't get first or second.
No, they... Oh. Yeah. Hmm. So now if they do... I don't really like doing this in the playoffs, but... Does Chicago trade Marian Hossa?
Yeah, so no movement clause, does he not?
Correct.
So you'd have to agree to it?
Yep.
I don't know.
And would you be interested? Because even though his cap hit is huge, he makes $1 million.
But we need the cap hit space.
I don't know. Don't forget it goes up 5% every year.
We've
got a pile of UFAs coming out.
But we also have a pile of people we need to pay.
Not this year.
Next year.
Year Marian after next.
Marian Hossa's got what, 8 years left?
4.
Was it only 4? I guess it's been playing. Yeah, I guess it was the last lockout. No. Love the guy. But I don't think, where would you put him?
I mean, left wing.
So you're going to...
They have him as a right, but I'm pretty sure he's a left wing.
So you're going to take out...
Was he a left wing? No, he was a right.
So...
Matt, well,
Stone would stay up at 1.
Yeah, I think this. But this stuff all depends on who you lose.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
A little bit thinking ahead right now, but
we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Yeah,
I don't have much left to talk about, so let's get to what grinds people's gears and get the hell out of here.
You know what really grinds my gears?
I surprisingly don't have one. I didn't have anything that really annoyed me. Other than the usual things which I've already commented on a fairly regular basis.
Dirt guy.
What, the fact that he was on SportsCenter yesterday?
So ridiculous.
He's got a cigarette. Like, he's promoting good health.
And a Stanley Cup shaved
into
his head.
And the fact that they brought him into the... And I know I tweeted that out, but Toronto's got the dirt guy. We've got Jonathan Petrie. Take Petrie any day.
Oh, absolutely. I'd rather have... A source of inspiration rather than a source of mockery. However, I don't know where you found the $5 bill with Dark Guy.
Someone made it.
Made into Sir Wilfrid Laurier. That was pretty strong.
I think that was Matty Yosensko, yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't have anything. Do you have anything?
We got an email.
I know we have a voicemail.
Yeah, let's play it.
Okay.
Hey, guys. It's Celia Ain't Calling. You know what really grinds my gears? I'm up working out the other night on the treadmill, running away. And that's all right. I get in there second, so there's a person in there already, and she has the TV on. They're cranking, and she's watching some stupid home ec cooking show, something happening. I don't know what's going on. And I'm going away. I've just got things, my headphones on, listening to music and stuff. But she has this TV just cranking because, of course, I'm stomping like hell on the treadmill. Well, then she leaves. And... She leaves the damn TV on the channel that I don't want to watch at all and watch this damn show and having a hard time hearing my own headphones because she has this TV cranked up and she just walks out like, hand me the remote or something, would you? Ask me if I want the TV on. I have to stop everything, go over and turn the damn thing off. Next week I'll get there before her and make her watch the damn hockey game.
You need to go to a new gym.
Yeah, actually, there's got to be something more annoying than watching a hockey game. Like, put it on...
Soap opera.
No, I was going to say, put it on...
No, soap opera, because if you don't know it, and you're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
So, you got to watch 10 years of tape to figure out who that character is.
Put it on Fox News or something. It'd be even more annoying. You have anything?
No.
No? You have anything?
Dark guy.
Okay. Week to come.
Tomorrow, which is Wednesday, I believe. In Boston. 7:30 start.
Yes.
7:30?
7:30
start.
Yeah, in Boston.
What? 7:30.
And it gets weirder.
Friday in Ottawa. 7:30 start.
7:30 start as well.
So,
what?
And again, I don't know how many tickets are still left from when the Leafers bought all of these out, but
standing room tickets are for sale.
This is, actually, they are.
Yep.
Some people like those for whatever reason. On StubHub, and this is an idea that I was tweeting out before, game day, just start driving to Kanata. If there's a lot of them, by around 6 o'clock, 6:30, the prices will drop. Yes. Buy them on your way.
Yeah, because people are just trying to get something for them.
Exactly. Because there was a lot of them for game one for $10.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They weren't sold, but people are just like, whatever, just I want times two, times four, like $40 back. And which I took heat for saying that we're getting the Leafers' money.
But you are.
We are.
And we are. And I told people, don't buy them right away. Let them drop so that they will never do it again.
Oh, they're not smart enough to learn.
But yeah, no, just go on the way. They do scan your phone for the tickets, so should be all good to go from there.
They do say for the StubHub ones to print them off, but I think you can. I've done it before. You give the ticket in your phone, and they'll scan it.
Yeah, it's a barcode, it sends you a PDF, so yeah, exactly. It's fine.
Okay, cool. All right. A little word of wisdom right there. Good play. All right.
I try that. Just in case it's a cheapo.
Yeah.
Why not?
You might just get lucky that way.
Get pay for your parking. This is about what, $67 or so? Or?
Holy, well, there's a lot available right now.
It's 25.
Parking is 25?
Is it? Okay.
For a playoff game. Yeah. Oh my God.
I don't know what I'm paying.
Again, that's obscene. That's just obscene.
All day at World Exchange is 21.
Well, I was going to say.
You say past 5, it's 28.
Gonna say parking in downtown, or parking at an airport, or parking at a sports venue, or parking at a hospital.
It's always good value there.
All sort of contained markets where you can't exactly go elsewhere. All right, we're not sure. We always say this, but we're not sure when we're coming back because we got some travel time coming up with pretty much all of us.
But we'll be back.
We'll be back in some form or another because the playoffs are important for us to be around. So just check your feed regularly. We'll be back at some point. You can always talk to us on Twitter to find out, or you can email us at podcast@sensecallups.com.
Please email us.
Yeah, please email us. Much easier to put a show together when I don't have to do a whole lot of planning. And you can also call and say what grinds your gears or your thoughts or anything else at the waiver wire at 1-844-SCU-6565. Thank you again to Ian Mendez for being so generous yet again with his time and his thoughts. On behalf of Pan and Canuck, I'm Cardinal. Thank you very much for listening. Good night.
Just win.